Welcome to Distant Voices, a podcast presented by Willamette Week. Join us every Wednesday to hear members of the Willamette Week newsroom talk to Oregonians about how they are overcoming the pandemic. Come back on Saturdays to listen to Dive, a podcast hosted by me, Hank Sanders, that takes a look at the Willamette Week cover story and includes interviews with the biggest names in the state. You can enjoy more episodes of these podcasts on this channel and learn more about our work at wweek.com. Enjoy this episode of Distant Voices.
Hi there, my name is Shannon. I'm Willamette Week's Music and Visual Arts Editor, here today with another episode of Distant Voices with Brad Pugh of the National Weather Service's Climate Prediction Center. Brad, how's it going today?
Good.
Much of Oregon is currently under either severe or extreme drought. So to start off, could you explain to us what these different designations mean and how they should be interpreted by the general public?
Yeah, so Shannon, the drought monitor as of last Tuesday shows that almost three quarters of the state of Oregon is designated with severe to extreme drought conditions. And almost a quarter are designated with the extreme to exceptional drought conditions. It's a pretty bad situation there drought-wise in Oregon, and you are entering the dry season now as you head into the summer, so expecting little or no relief, and actually most likely scenario would be for intensifying drought conditions through the summer months.
Right. I know that the Klamath Basin is already experiencing a drought emergency. And here in the Willamette Valley, we also had a drought last year. But in terms of, precipitation fall, we're doing way worse this time of year than we were last year. So, I mean, are we headed for a drought emergency here in the Willamette Valley too?
Yeah, I would think so right now, because this drought, it dates back to really the last winter, the winter of 2019-20. So it's been ongoing for some time, but the drought intensity level has worsened with back-to-back poor precipitation during the winter months.
What are the major factors that are driving this drought? Is it climate change or what is it?
Yeah, I mean, this is more tied to lack of precipitation during the past couple of winters, but also last summer, above normal temperatures certainly helped to intensify the drought.
What's causing those abnormal temperatures and lack of precipitation?
Yeah, it's certainly a trend in warming as you go dating back a few decades. The precipitation, it varies from year to year. If you go back to the fall of 2018, you were in a similar drought situation, but the following winter was fairly wet and really helped the drought situation quite a bit. So it does vary year to year, the precipitation and the drought associated with that.
How does this drought compare historically? Is it unprecedented? Is it fairly normal? What are we looking at here?
Yeah, it's the intensity level. It's pretty bad. If you look back through the past decade, I guess it's somewhat on par to what happened 3 years ago, but we're seeing more of the extreme to exceptional drought levels compared to what happened 3 years ago.
Yeah, looking at long-term trends, like how concerned should we be that this is happening right now?
Yeah, it's a major concern considering the decadal warming we're seeing in the long-term trend. So, drought is a climate phenomenon we'll have to certainly be aware of here in the future years.
In the short term, if we do enter extreme or exceptional drought here in the Willamette Valley, what is that going to look like for local ecology? Like, are we going to be end up, like, is it going to be bad enough that we're going to have to ration water like in California? Yeah, what would that mean for us?
Yeah, it could lead to water shortages, low reservoir levels. And also, as you move later into the summer and early fall, you have to think about a, high wildfire danger and an increase in wildfires later this summer.
Yeah, I definitely think that's on everyone's mind. when these designations are made to determine how bad a drought is, what are some of the things that you're using to move from one designation up to another?
Very good question. The U.S. Drought Monitor authors use a convergence of evidence approach. So it's not one single indicator such as precipitation, but a number of indicators such as stream flows, soil moisture, and also local feedback from various partners, state climatologists and so forth. And we do use a percentile methodology, so to put it more of a historical perspective. So for example, currently soil moisture conditions are in the lowest fifth percentile for much of the state of Oregon, just to give you kind of a idea of how low the soil moisture conditions are currently.
Yeah, what are some of the other things that it means for us right now in the Willamette Valley to have severe drought? What does that tangibly mean for us?
Lack of soil moisture would be one. 28-day stream flow levels below the fifth or tenth percentile historically, or a couple of couple of impacts.
And so you touched on this a little bit earlier, but is this something that we are going to be more likely to see more frequently in the future?
Yeah, certainly could be the case, considering the long-term warming trends we're seeing, that would more frequent drought would go hand in hand with that.
So what should we be doing both in the short term and the long term to deal with this?
Yeah, I think number one is just to be aware of the changing climate, also what any water conservation you can make publicly that can also help as well.
Hey guys, I know this episode's a little bit shorter than it usually is, and that's because we only did one Distant Voices interview from the newsroom this week. But we do want to end the show with an interview between K2 News reporters and Andy Pruitt. Andy Pruitt, who's on the Willamette Week staff and wrote the cover story about beer a week and a half ago. Because if you missed that cover story, either the print edition or the much superior interview that we did on Dive, the much longer and more in-depth interview, then you can just listen to this and get a really good sense of what the beer culture is like in Portland post-pandemic. And I think it's a really good 4 minutes that recaps the article well. So enjoy and take the 6 minutes that we owe you and lop it on to another episode, because we owe you some time, we owe you some Distant Voices, but we'll get you back. Don't worry. With no further ado, enjoy this interview and see you on Saturday.
Been a rough year for an industry near and dear to the heart of Portland. We're talking about craft beer. At the beginning of the pandemic, it was unclear how hard breweries would be hit by the shutdown, but many managed to thrive amid uncertain times. And then came the wildfires, causing more hurdles for many breweries already navigating rough waters. This week, as we prepare for the annual Oregon Beer Awards, Willamette Week is focusing on some of those breweries that turned to innovation to stay open. And joining us to talk about the article is Willamette Week Assistant Arts and Culture Editor Andy Pruitt. Andy, thank you for joining us.
Great to be here.
One brewery that has really prided itself on being craft only and draft only, as a matter of fact, had to make some changes as bars and restaurants across the state shut down. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite breweries in the state, Barley Brown's. It's located a little more than 300 miles east of Portland in the town of Baker City. And it's actually one of the state's most decorated breweries. But they've been in business for over 20 years and they famously refused to can their beer. It's a point of pride for founder Tyler Brown, where his customers need to get off their couch, out of their living rooms, out the front door, go find a bar or a restaurant in order to get one of his pints of beer fresh from the tap. And so the one time his beer actually was canned, 2 years ago, it was sort of this novelty showcase at a beer fest in Boise, Idaho, where they brought in a mobile canner and they kegged his beer live there in front of everyone. It was so popular, people actually smuggled the cans of beer out rather than drink them there on site to sort of use as a keepsake. He found quickly after the lockdown, in order to survive, he needed to shift his business model. So he actually reached out to that mobile canner from the festival and they started packaging 1 week after the spring lockdowns in 2020. So he was able to survive. He did a full year packaging off and on, depending on whether they were open or closed. And fans were actually happy because they could get Barley Brown's beer on a regular basis in 16-ounce cans.
Some turn to delivery to keep revenue and maintain their staff. Talk about some of the issues they ran into, Andy.
Well, if you're a beer drinker, you know that in spring in particular, delivery was a lifeline for many of the city's breweries. Von Ebert Brewing in Portland, they were one of the first actually right out of the gate to start packaging their beer. And, you know, there was some snafus in the beginning every once in a while, but overall it was largely successful. And employees, they jumped on the delivery. They trained themselves how to use the online payment system. They took photos of the beer to post on the website. They planned the delivery logistics, the whole shebang. Now, there were challenges. They accidentally programmed their site to look like it was out of some of their most popular beers every once in a while. At one point, they also resorted to using those Avery envelope labels as stickers to put on their cans to save money. And then, of course, the biggest sort of challenge they ran into was just profit. Although it was highly popular, 1 day of delivery was equivalent to 1 hour of business pre-Timbers match at their Pearl Pub.
There will be some changes to this year's beer awards. What will be different this year?
Yeah, so everything is online this year because of the pandemic, but it's still going to be a great party. The Oregon Beer Awards will take place tomorrow. They start at 5:30 p.m. Tickets are just $5, which is a great deal for one of the biggest and best beer parties in town. We still have the same great categories. We still had the same double-blind judging process, so you know this is a highly credible adjudication event. And we also have the same brewer co-hosts, and of course, heavy drinking among all of the participants who are watching, tuning in to see if they're going to win on this live stream tomorrow. So again, it's one of the biggest, most anticipated beer parties in town. And this year, no stage, no problem. They are coming to you live from a hot tub.
I'm thirsty all of a sudden, by the way, Andy. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. As always, you can read the entire article.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for listening to this episode of Distant Voices. Thank you to everyone who was a part of this episode, including the guests and Willamette Week Newsroom. Also, special thank you to AmpMusic.co and Heather Witte for the music that you heard on this podcast. For more great content, be sure to follow Dive by Willamette Week on all podcast platforms, join us Saturdays for our Dive podcast show, and follow along with Willamette Week's content at WWeek.com and on all social platforms. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.